into the world. Good morning, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the House of the Risen Sun with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And I'm having a wonderful Saturday. How are you doing today, Bruce?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah. And looking forward to diving into, I think we're on the home stretch of Gary's fourth book, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's only been a year, so gosh. Usually I don't take a year to read a book. But
I don't either, but it's kind of been fun.
Well, it has been. And, you know, I recognize this morning I have a call on Saturday mornings with another group, and we were talking about the lesson and the topic of special relevance for these lessons. And, you know, kind of how astounding all of it is. But I was thinking, you know, here's a book that certainly has taken me a long time to read, A Course in Miracles, even though, you know, I thought I had read it. Apparently I have not, because every day something new, something that I hadn't thought about or had not, I mean, I thought about it, but it didn't say the same thing to me yesterday that it's telling me today. You know, have you had that experience? Got that experience?
Oh, absolutely. Every time I open it, it's like, wow, that was in there. I mean, or if I know that I've read it, you know, just on a conscious level, but the meaning gets deeper every time I read it. So,
well, exactly. And yeah. When I first got, you know, people are going to laugh about this. When I first got the Disappearance of the Universe, I read that thing over and over. I had to keep going back and looking at it and you know, rereading, you know, sections. And, you know, I've never had a book that I did that before until I started studying A Course in Miracles.
Yeah.
And it is, even though, you know, a lot of people, you know, might look at it and say, well, you know, this doesn't seem real spiritual, because...
Or you didn't get it the first time. How come you have to read it twice?
Right, exactly. I have a photographic memory, and I mean, no, it's because the nuances of what is being said are so foreign to the ego that... once you get caught up in reading it, the ego will tell you, well, that didn't make sense, or I can't, it doesn't work for me, or, you know, you go into some kind of denial, and actually, you do that subconsciously, to go into denial about this stuff. And Jesus talks to us about how it is that we just veil ourselves from actually seeing and getting this stuff, because if you really got it, you wouldn't be here anymore.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, as Ken Wapnick points out, it's not that we don't understand it, it's that we don't want to understand it. Because we know full well, on some level or another, there's a part of us, or more accurately, all of us, that is disguised by the little part of us that we call our seemingly separate selves. You know, there's an awareness that we know exactly where this is coming from. We know you know, there's not really a who, but the what is the source of this. And that source basically is the perfect storm, the perfect threat, the perfect antidote to undoing the self that we think we are. And that's terrifying to the self that we think we are, because it basically says all that we've invested in as a separate self is brought to the light of gentle scrutiny, and you know, most of the time we don't want to go there, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. It just means that you know, we're afraid of love. You know, so these calls for love that come from our reading and rereading and rereading of A Course in Miracles, you know, they're basically, you know, progressive wake-up calls to appeal to the true being that we are, that wants to you know, respond to that call. And we need to develop, you know, patience with ourselves as we shift our identity from one of separate interest to shared interest, and from one of basically hatred to one of love. And we don't even know what the love is. I mean, because the love isn't really a part of this world, but we can see through the eyes of love and see the world completely differently. And that's why, you know, we have so much resistance to it, and that's why it takes so many times. I mean, I first picked up, you know, the three volumes in the mid-70s, kind of looked at them in a sort of curious way, because my mom had them in her library, very early versions of, you know, early printed, probably the first printing, I guess, in the mid-70s. And I didn't touch them after that. I mean, just kind of flipped through and was like, oh, well, maybe I'll look at this someday, you know. And then finally it was mid-80s that I finally, you know, took, I think it was actually those three volumes from my mom's place in California to another place in the foothills where I moved to, and I said, yeah, I think it's time for me to, you know, see what's in here, and it was, you know, then that it was like, wow, this is amazing. And even then, I mean, I studied them for about three or four years pretty intensely, and was in study groups in the Grass Valley and Nevada City foothill area of Northern California. And even then, there was a whole bunch that I didn't get. And it wasn't until Gary's first book came out that it was like, oh my gosh, that's in there? I mean, the emphasis on forgiveness, you know, sort of eluded me, you know. And the brilliance of Ken Wapnick's work. I had one of Ken's books, Forgiveness and Jesus, you know, back in the mid-80s. And I kind of looked at the cover and said, oh, I see who this is from.
Forgiveness and Jesus, okay.
And so, you know, but I was, you know, we undo our investment in the ego gradually, and that's usually a more sane approach, because of the tremendous investment we have in our egos, and it takes time, and it takes what we think of as time, in order to do this without retreating more deeply into fear, as the Course points out. You know, it's usually a slow process of letting go of the investment in the self that is the what's in it for me insanity, and replacing it with a shared interest that really brings more and more consistent peace. And so the part of us that doesn't want to go there doesn't know what it is, has no idea what love is or what the Christ is or what real peace is, but it just knows that it's a threat to the self that it made up. It's a not invented here syndrome, and says, I don't want to go there. I may be miserable, but I'm familiar with my misery, right?
Exactly. Well, and you know what you're saying, it really is kind of cute and funny, because it's almost like you know, we're saying to our true self, like we're playing a game of hide and seek, and we're saying to our true self, come out wherever you are. Mm-hmm. But that's not really what's happening, because it's already out.
Right.
We're the ones that are hiding.
Yeah, exactly.
Just saying, ooh, when will I be found? I best hide good so I'm not found. Because we don't want to be found. We don't want to, you know, and I'm not saying we as in all of us, there's none of us who want to be found. I'm saying that in general, what we are, in fact, does not want to be found, because why? There's no more story after that. Mm-hmm. You know, have you ever read a book or seen a movie or something that you just would wish would never end? It's just so good and so wonderful that you just want to know more and keep going on. What happened to that character? You know, and I do it in my mind. Mm-hmm. I make rest of the story, I continue to think, oh, if he would have been here then, that would have, you know, I have all these, because I love the story. Really, that's what we're doing.
Yeah,
we're loving the story. And the story continues as long as we like it.
Right.
And even when we say we don't like the story, as in, you know, I don't like that, you know, Dove fell and broke his hip and now he's in the hospital and he had surgery, and I don't like that part of the story, you know, that's still my story. Obviously, it must be because I just told it. So,
well, wish Dove a speedy recovery for me. I didn't know that.
So. Yeah, it just happened. He just had surgery yesterday, but and he's doing really well. By the way, everyone in the room, Dove is doing well. He's up and walking, or you know, attempting to walk, eating. He's doing well. So, but anyway. it doesn't matter, you know, as long as I want to keep telling the story, the story will continue for me. Mm-hmm. And it's only when I decide, you know, I would rather have the truth than to hear this story anymore. Or this story has just gotten so old and so repetitive, and I know what's going to happen. That's the thing about the story. The entire story of the illusion is so predictable. And, you know, I mean, that's how people can write, you know, books and movies, is because they're counting on the predictability of the story. If this happens, then that will happen. And, you know, I don't even know if it is, you know, any part of it, because the story was already written a long time ago, and all we're doing is actually watching it, but we're thinking that we're making it up as we go along, and that's why we participate in it. We mm-hmm. still think we're a part of, if I don't participate in it, it won't exist.
Right.
And there's a lot of people who say, well, what would happen to my family if I, you know, became enlightened and was no longer participating in this, you know, this illusion? What would happen to my kids? Or nothing. Nothing would change.
To the people having the dream goes on.
Yeah. To the people having the dream, the dream goes on. You don't ruin their dream by stepping out of it. The character that you are, that you are playing, is still a part of the dream. But you're just not, it's not you. It's not what you are. And that's what today, the reading today, the topic of special relevance, what is creation, and so much also the lesson, really is talking about that very thing. What is this thing that I think I am? And what is my relationship to it? What is my relationship, you know, am I the creation, or am I the creator? What am I here? And it's such a great thing to contemplate, you know, but it's also a great thing to understand that if you really knew that, you wouldn't participate in the story anymore, and you wouldn't worry about whatever happened. You would be free, like today's lesson says. You know, God's freedom is my own. I would be free. Now, that's what Byron Katie says. You know, when you go through the four questions and what would you be without your story? And the answer is always, I would be free.
I mean, Ringo Starr song, "What Would I Be Without My Story?" No. I'm paraphrasing.
I think you are.
I mean, I'm generalizing slightly, I think, to his lyrics.
Anyway. That's true. So we are reading, actually reading a book, guys. The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, A History of Mighty Companions, by our dear friend Gary R. Renard. Art and Impersa have just returned after having been gone for a while. And I think, where were we going to start?
I think we were going to recap the note where he talks about how he's healing from his prior relationship and with his ex-wife, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to start with that? And
Yeah. Okay. You want me to read?
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So, note. After my divorce from Karen, she sent me a message written in the form of poetry by Suzanne Berry. Incredibly, Cindy's first husband, Steve, from whom she had also been recently divorced, sent her the exact same message. When Cindy showed it to me, I couldn't believe it. Both Karen and Steve had felt a connection with the same deeply meaningful words. Minds are joined, and Cindy and I could both identify with the message as well. And here is this message that both Karen Renard and Cindy's ex-husband Steve sent to their ex-spouses. Interesting. I wish I could go back in time, back to those unspoiled moments in our relationship, before hurt ever touched our hearts, before doubt ever entered our minds. Because if I could go back and start from those moments once more, I would hold you longer, never miss a chance to tell you how much you mean to me, and I would never, ever hurt you. But I know we can't go back to those days. I know I can't erase the mistakes, and I can't take away the questions you must have or the hurt we both feel. But I can assure you of one thing. I love you, as I did then, and as I always will. Wow, that's a beautiful message. And very, very sweet and beautiful message. You can go back in time, undo the past, by the way. That's what the miracle does.
It does, it does. And as I was reading that, I was thinking, you know, the sentiment is really lovely. And, you know, we not only can we go back and erase, because forgiveness does that, and, you know, we really, in truth, didn't hurt anyone. And I was thinking of the Hippocratic Oath, you know, above all else, do no harm. And in truth, we never could. And we never did, and we never will. And that is blasphemy to the ego, because the ego says, well, my whole existence is predicated on there being a victim and a victimizer, you know, a good and a bad, a wrong and a right, and you know, some kind of polarization going on here that makes my little separate identity real. The foisters and the foistees, you know, whatever the polarity is, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, we could call it anything you want, but as long as there's two of something, the two-ness is not the relationship. It's really the shared interest that is the unifying principle that is in our minds. That really is where the real relationship is. And the ego's fake relationship is all about the differences and making big deals about those differences. And, and you know, it's really from the oneness that, you know, the respect for diversity is a phrase you often hear in terms of not only just gender relationships, but ethnic and, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, that. And yet, where that respect really comes from is an appreciation of the intrinsic oneness, or at least sameness, the shared identity that expresses in different forms, but really has at its core, at its heart, you know, seeing through or beyond the appearance, the truly shared reality and truly shared identity that we all have, are, and share.
So. Exactly.
It can never be threatened.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's what is, gosh, I mean, this must be the theme of the day. I saw a video this morning, and I posted it on my wall on Facebook, and I can give you a link to it. It's really interesting. It's a fellow, and he's talking about his son, who is autistic and is in school, and he, you know, he had spent his entire, sitting at lunch by himself, nobody included him, et cetera, et cetera. But as an adolescent, he got on to, I think, a football team. The final game of the final whatever, and the team was winning, whatever. Somehow or the other, this boy was able to make an assist and make a goal. And that was like the first time in his life that had ever happened. And he, you know, it was just such a joyful moment. But the dad knew, the dad watched, and the dad knew that somehow or the other that had been planned. So he went over to the other team and he said, I want to thank you for what you did. And the coach said, it wasn't me, it was these boys, that they knew that he needed to have that. And so they, as a team, gave up a goal for their team so that this boy could score a goal. And he's talking about because they decided to see the sameness rather than the differences, even though he wasn't on their team, even though it gave their team, they lost a goal. Still, their desire to reach out and to extend love into that shared sameness is really, it changed a life, and not just his life, because everybody who watches that, like me, is affected by it.
I can tell you are from your voice.
It ripples through the entire sonship. Everyone is affected by this act of good. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
If you haven't seen the movie Invictus with Matt Damon and, oh, come on, brain fade. anyways, it's about Nelson Mandela. It's a wonderful film, and it basically, you know, talks about how the sport, you know, of soccer really brought the country together, you know, from apartheid, and it's really a great film. If you haven't seen it, it's on probably in my top 10 list of of inspirational films, and it's really you know. What we've been talking about is, you know, that, you know, politically we talk about reaching across the aisle, but that's really an expression of that awareness that says I'm not different from anyone else. That perfect sameness is a reflection of the perfect oneness, but that sameness then manifests in a heartfelt reaching across to extend, you know, caring, forgiveness, kindness, you know, whatever the behavior is that reflects that understanding that, you know, we're not separate. You know, that we may appear in vastly different forms and behaviors and bodies and all kinds of stuff, but, you know, the people's front of Judea is the Judean people's front. You know, there's no difference.
There's no difference. What are you talking about? Why are we worrying?
Really?
It's hilarious.
Should I read on a little bit?
Yeah, why don't you read on?
Okay. So Gary continued, there was nothing I could say after that. Even special love in this world can find humility and dignity. I'll always love Karen, and I know Cindy will always love Steve. Yet the time will come in our relationship when the temporary will be replaced by the permanent. No one will be left out. And I was just reading in the course somewhere the other day that corresponding phrase, you know, forgotten, love has forgotten no one. The title of one of Gary's other books. As Jay once said a long time ago, heaven is like a wedding and everyone is invited. And just a quick aside, I think that's where Ken Wapnick emphasizes in so much of his teaching, you know, the challenge of this material is that we want to leave certain individuals, certain groups, whether it's, you know, it's political, ethnic, you know, geographic, cultural, gender, you know, whatever distinction we can think of, economic, you know, we want to somehow think that some differences are important, you know, or to paraphrase George Orwell, you know, all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others, you know.
Absolutely. And that, boy, is that ever just a killer of things when
it is, and
you don't know you're doing it unless you absolutely look at it.
Right.
So
exactly. Yeah. We just have to look at all those judgments moment to moment to moment where we, you know, the ego mind interprets things as a division. You know, it that's the only thing it knows how to do is to divide and to categorize and to separate. And it's not saying that you know, in a practical sense that we should not, you know, make those distinctions, but it's the condemnation, it's the pigeonholing with an intent to harm, you know, above all do no harm. And if we see a distinction as some kind of a pro or a con or in any way that changes the relative amount of innocence or goodness or you know, the spirit that is any part of seeming part of the whole, then, you know, we're back into the ego's game again, and we just have to learn how to use forgiveness to opt out of it at every moment. So
yeah, and we just have to do it consistently. That's
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
That's the whole point, is just to do it consistently. And even if you don't, you know, it's like the rules for decision. You know, every time you start to bob up or down, you're floating on the ocean of waves, and you're a little floaty thing. And when you start dipping down, you know, you just recognize, oh, I must have forgotten what I'm here for, what I'm doing here. And, okay. And I mean, you can do that every moment, every moment, every moment. And actually, I was talking with another group this morning earlier about, the lesson for today, and the lesson for today really emphasizes that, because he's talking about, I didn't understand what made me free, nor what my freedom is, nor where to look to find it. I have searched in vain until I heard your voice directing me. Now I would guide myself no more. So this is about we hear God's voice directing us. And, you know, what was it that Jesus said back in, like, chapter 1, chapter 2? He says, my final lesson, and it took great willingness and effort, was to hear only one voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jesus himself is telling us, you know, it was hard. You know, I kept bouncing back and forth. You know, I heard the world, and I decided to hear God, and I heard the world, and I decided to hear God. Eventually, with great willingness and effort, not just a little willingness, which is what he tells us other places, but he says really
abundant willingness is another phrase that's used later on. You know, after the bait and switch of a little willingness at the earlier part, right?
Exactly. So to get to that point that this lesson is telling us today, Father, my freedom is in you alone. My freedom is hearing only one voice. My freedom is listening only to God's holy voice about everything. And the more I do that, the more my world shifts, my perception of this life shifts, my perception of suffering shifts, my perception of joy shifts, everything shifts. From shifting that perception from listening to the world or listening to God. And I'm just very grateful that, you know, I'm not 99 years old and learning about this. I'm glad I got it while I still had time.
Yeah. And yet, I'm sure there's probably people who are, you know, 99 who first come across this material, and they get exactly what they need from it too. So
exactly, yeah. Exactly. But this gives me a life of joy now.
Yeah,
I mean, it would give them a life of joy too. It gives you a life of joy to recognize this. So anyway, continue reading. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. No. All helpful. So Arden continues. Very nice, brother. None of you are little. You know, we're all of spirit, as they say. So. Profoundly. What you really are is something that can't even be contained by the universe of time and space. There you go. Don't accept the ego's evaluation of you. It does not see truly. Gary, yes, I have to remember that what I really am has nothing to do with the lies I've been thinking for eons. People, even course students, have had this guilt forever, and it's not representative of the truth. I need to remind myself of that and to remember to undo it. Arden. Then remember these words, Gary, and don't be afraid to live as though you truly believe them, for the Holy Spirit does see truly. You are altogether irreplaceable in the mind of God. No one else can fill your part in it, and while you leave your part of it empty, your eternal place merely waits for your return. God, through his voice, reminds you of it, and God himself keeps your extensions safe within it. Yet, you do not know them until you return to them. You cannot replace the kingdom, and you cannot replace yourself. God, who knows your value, would not have it so, and so it is not so. Your value is in God's mind, and therefore not in yours alone. To accept yourself as God created you cannot be arrogance, because it is the denial of arrogance. To accept your littleness is arrogant, because it means that you believe your evaluation of yourself is truer than God's. Yet if truth is indivisible, your evaluation of yourself must be God's. You did not establish your value, and it needs no defense. Nothing can attack it nor prevail over it. It does not vary. It merely is. Ask the Holy Spirit what it is, and he will tell you. But do not be afraid of his answer, because it comes from God. It is an exalted answer because of its source, but the source is true, and so is its answer. And, yeah, great reminders. Huh? The word replacement kind of reminded me of sort of a mnemonic device I use the letters S-I-N for sin are contained in three words that I find helpful to, you know, kind of flag ego thinking. And one, of course, is specialness. that has S-I-N in it. Separation is also in there, that belief. And substitution. And so when we think that we've replaced our perfect oneness with something less than that, we think that we've somehow made this shabby substitute that, you know, this dead horse that is really just a silly dream that we keep regurgitating and trying to resurrect and you know, it keeps not working. And then we, you know, it's, so that's where the peace really comes from, the consistency of learning that the substitution we made isn't cutting it. And, a phrase that I kind of learned to use when I need a little humor is, you know, I kind of imagine Jesus asking me, how's that working out for you, that thought system you made up?
Exactly. How's that working out for you? Jim Dunn just wrote a book. I ordered it. Hopefully it'll be here in a couple of days. Carrie read it and said it's really good. I'm sure it is. He always says, and which part of this illusion do I believe is true?
Mm-hmm.
Which part of this illusion do I believe is real?
You know? Or paraphrased another way, you know, what part of perfect oneness do we not want to get, you know?
Exactly. Oh, and you know what? When you were reading that quote, I was thinking about the topic of special relevance today, which is what is creation?
Mm-hmm.
And in that, he does say, let's see, where is it? Creation is the sum of all God's thoughts in number infinite and everywhere without all limit. So that's us.
Yeah.
That's what he says down here. We are creation. We are the sons of God. We the sons of God. We are creation. We are the sum of all of God's thoughts in number infinite and everywhere without all limit. So, you know, when they're talking about the arrogance of saying that we're not, you know, what Jesus is saying here in this, this section, the arrogance of saying that that's not true is outrageous.
It is. Yep, it really is outrageous. But, you know, the thing is, we get every opportunity, every moment, by the way we feel, by the feedback that comes to us, and you know, I keep coming back to the wisdom and the beauty really of the idea that Ken Wapnick puts in his conversations about Freud, where he says, you know, Freud showed, you know, described dreams as the royal road to looking at the unconscious, and he was referring to nocturnal dreams, but then Ken says, well, if all your time is spent in dreaming, as the Course says, then everything that reflects the world of space and time then becomes our classroom. And we, you know, directed by Holy Spirit, by our inner kindness teacher, or Jesus of Course in Miracles, can, you know, can toss away, you know, discard, jettison the ego's interpretation of things. And what is left is really the sparkling beauty and innocence and purity of thought that results from seeing our brothers without judgment, our brothers and sisters completely without any condemnation. And that is what's, you know, joyous. That's what's fun, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's the only thing that is fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
The rest of it is not.
Yeah.
So do you want to continue reading?
Sure. Gary, I love that. I really need the reminders to help keep me going. And I know you said this would be the last discussion in the series of visits. Do you think there'll be another series of visits? Arden, why don't you just try to digest this series first? Kind of a good reminder to all of us how you know, we want to jump ahead instead of just, again, processing the classroom that's right in front of us, you know, our royal road that's take the next step on the royal road of looking at our dream world and forgiving exactly what appears to be our current situation right now. And if there's nothing to forgive, as Gary's teachers also frequently share, you know, then celebrate.
Exactly. And you will, too.
Exactly.
That's the only thing you will do is when there's nothing to forgive, everything's beautiful. You're in the real world. You know, that's what he says, what do you think you're going to see? Everything is shining and wonderful and and you know, everything is peaceful and joyful. So, you know, what else can you do? If there's nothing left to forgive, you're done.
Yeah. Like last night, I decided I've been working hard on this new website for FIP, and it's coming along really nicely, and you know, spoiler alert, it should be online in about a week, but I'll give more details next week, but that's unofficial, but Tam Morgan did mention on the conference, Awaken to Love conference, and her recorded portion of that already. So it's the cat's already a little bit out of the bag, but it won't really be, you know, ready until about another week from now, in terms of polished and dusted off and everything. So, but, you know, last night I thought, I need a little break. And, you know, I'm having a lot of fun with what I'm doing, but sometimes it's nice a little shift gear. So I went out our community has a monthly bunko game, and it's just a silly dice game, but there's some just wonderful people in our community. And I you know, went from table to table, as you do in this silly game, and just, you know, shared a spirit of fun and silliness and good times with these friends that I've made over the last couple of years. It's like, I realized, you know, it's really nice to be able to just not expect anything and allow the beauty of the relationships that we have with people that, you know, would have been considered strangers a couple of years ago, and now that they consider them friends, and it's just kind of fun. It really is, just to see that awareness is in everyone, and just have fun with it, you know, just enjoy the the connections we have, and remember to see that spirit in everyone as we're doing whatever we're doing.
You know, exactly. So. And what we're doing when we do that, we're calling to the Christ in them. Mm-hmm. The Christ in me calls to the Christ in you. Namaste. You know, that's exactly what you're doing when you do that. That's what's so wonderful about looking at the sameness of each other, is because it is obviously not real or true that we're the same. You know, bodies have all the, but we can look at the sameness in our needs, as Marshall Rosenberg taught us. The sameness in our wants and desires. You know, seriously, the things that the ego has made, when we look at them, we all want the same thing. You know, we may not want the same kind of car, but we all want, you know, food and a place to live and comfort and, you know, beautiful things and companionship and, you know, we have needs of all the same things. So why would we think that another person's needs make them bad?
Right. You know, and as you're saying that, Lynn, I was just thinking, well, and we've made up a world, the substitute world, without most of the time consciously being aware of the fact that we're doing that, that is set up to fail. Because there's no way that all of our real needs can be met by this world, no matter how hard we try. You know how well we take care of ourselves. You know, just add a century to anybody's age, and you know, things start looking pretty mediocre. You know, just for starters. So if we can remember that, you know, that there really is a reality that's beyond appearances, where all of our true needs and wants really are met, that have nothing, no demands on anyone of anything, that is really just our true nature expressing itself and being itself, the more we recognize that the world isn't going to do it for us, but rather there can be a very graceful trajectory through this crazy world while we learn to identify with what really does fulfill us. And then, you know, most of the time our apparent needs in the world are met. And sometimes if they aren't, then that's part of our forgiveness classroom. We just recognize, okay, so there's something that I need to forgive because I made my peace of mind predicated on something happening or not happening in the world. And it's only, you know, the revelation that the world was made to mask the reality of where our needs really all are met all the time, eternally, that we have that foundation from which to forgive, right?
beautifully said. I love that. That kind of wraps it up, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, I think the idea is to just, you know, keep finding, you know, fresh ways of you know, allowing spirit to, you know, give us that information. And, you know, we do have that guidance available to us 24/7, 365, if we just are willing to practice listening and, you know, noticing when we're condemning, noticing when we're, you know, playing the victim card and just saying, oh, do I really want to do that again? Including the ways when we appear to be the victimizer as well as the victim, you know?
Absolutely.
And,
Yeah. Well, it's actually looking at all of that, and that's what's the beauty of this course. You know, Jesus isn't giving us some kind of a vague, you know, practice this mantra or do this meditation thing. He's giving us a whatever you look at, ask wherever you go, ask the question. Whoever you talk to, ask the question. What is the purpose of this?
Right.
And look. You know, look for the real meaning of whatever's happening here rather than, you know, just la, 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 going through life, sit down and meditate for 20 minutes. I mean, you might do that in that 20 minutes, but he's saying this is an all day, everyday thing.
Yeah.
You will do this all 100% or not at all.
Yeah.
You know, this is an all day, everyday thing that there's no exception allowed, really. If you really want to see the truth, you have to be dedicated to seeing the truth, and that's, if that's all you want to see, that is really what you will see. You see it now, but the ego tells you this thing that's here to keep order in the illusion. The ego tells you, oh no, that no, don't worry about that over there. You know, don't look at the man behind the curtain. You're you know, just fine here. And really, you know that's what's happening,
mm-hmm.
and you're not fooled by the illusion anymore. So, you know, it's much easier to just question, you know, just start with little stuff. Why did I say that? What does this mean? Where did I get that idea from? That's a big one for me. Where did I get that idea from? Because when I start looking at the source of my conclusions about people and the world and life and health and food and everything, they're all ideas that came to me from something or someone else having, you know, something my mom told me, or I saw it on TV, or you know, I read it in a book, or somebody posted on Facebook, or there's all these different things that are giving me all this information about what is, and I'm coming to the conclusion of, you know, I'm making up my mind about what I'm seeing. So, you know, just come to the point where I looked at something and I decided that's what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody told me, you know, don't walk on red, and so I stop even though there's no traffic anywhere. You know, that... Oh, gosh. Anyway.
So if Moses had followed that logic, he wouldn't have crossed the Red Sea, right?
That's right. Oh, my gosh. Or he'd be seeing red, I don't know.
couldn't resist.
All right.
Should I go on?
Yeah, go on, yeah.
Okay. Persis says... excuse me, back up. Here's where I left off. Gary says, cool. So I'll keep on doing the ego with my mind's power to choose. But you know, some course students or people who think they're course students are saying you've got to forget about the mind and think with your heart. They say you can have love only with your heart. You know, the quote, heart of Christ consciousness, unquote, and all that stuff. Persa, I hate to disappoint them, but you can't think with your heart. Your heart is part of the body. It doesn't have a little brain in it. And the brain is just a part of the body, too. The mind is not in the brain. The brain is in the mind. Important distinction. And remember George Grodek? And remember, there's no E at the end of George. It's spelled G-E-O-R-G. Gary, sure, he healed Mary Baker Eddy, the founder of Christian Science. Hirsa. He was the facilitator of the healing. Her mind was the healer. Eventually, she had a relapse, but the seeds had been planted, and she went on to help many. And Grodek was a visionary, a true pioneer of the mind. He understood that all illnesses of the mind, as is all healing. By the way, Mary wrote and said a lot of interesting things. Gary, one of my favorites is, truth is immortal, error is mortal. Hirsa, that's pretty cool. Yes, and by the way, we understand that people who emphasize the heart are talking about love, and there's nothing wrong with talking about it, but you won't find real permanent love by talking about it or by trying to be more loving or even by trying to emulate Jay. You'll find it by undoing the barriers to it. You should keep looking to forgive anything you've placed in between yourself and your true nature. The ego is a formidable illusion. It's like a machine. It keeps persisting, which is why you've got to be vigilant. Always remember this vital quotation from the Course. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all of the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. It is not necessary to seek for what is true, but it is necessary to seek for what is false.
So, yeah, so there we go. That's exactly what we've been saying.
Mm-hmm.
I have to look and say, is it true? Byron Katie opened up a world for me.
Yes.
Because once I started asking those questions, I recognized, oh, this is a perfect way to practice forgiveness. Because not to just look at something and say, I know that that's not real, and so I'm you know, going to let it go. To look at it and say, what is it that I think is real here? And to question the reality of it to the point where I can just say, what would I be without this story? Mm-hmm. And you recognize there's you don't need the story. I mean, the story is ridiculous, and you can let it go. But you can't just let it go by just saying, you know, I see it's not real and so I forgive it. That's ludicrous. Yeah. You didn't learn it that way.
Yeah, it's our investment in the story. The stories themselves are neutral, just as the body is neutral. Anything in the world of space and time is ultimately neutral because it's a dream. It's an illusion. It's a hologram. But it's our investment in it. This is where the real rubber meets the road, is just looking at that investment without condemnation, saying, oh, wow, I must have decided wrongly because I'm not at peace. Wow, what do you know? I could choose again. I could see things differently.
I could
see peace instead of this, yeah.
Exactly. And if I see that, then what does Jesus also say? This actually changes things retroactively and proactively.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes to the past and heals those issues that you had in the past, those fears. It's healed because it's forgiven. It's released. And you don't have that to come back on you anymore. And then you don't have to project it into the future because it doesn't exist. It has no existence. So it's a wonderful thing. I mean, forgiveness is such a helpful thing for the mind, right?
Completely. And the next paragraph emphasizes that again.
Go on.
Do you want to read?
Okay, I'll read. Gary, so it'll always come back to the fact that salvation is undoing and forgiveness is the way to undo the ego. Then love, which is what you are, will be there naturally. But you can't skip the undoing part. Oh, geez, gosh, you could have saved 5 minutes. Or your love will be temporary, mixed in with the ego, and your mind will be a mixed bag. Without the complete healing of the Holy Spirit, you'll stay stuck on Cycle Planet forever. And that's a good point, too, is that, you know, the longer we want to stay in the theater and insist that we can change the movie, we're just going to be stuck in the theater. And you know, meanwhile, outside the sun is shining and the birds are singing. So, you know, what the hell are we doing? So,
and it may look like, at first, like it's an idyllic situation on Gilligan's Island. But then, you know, the gorillas come out and the inevitable problems with stuff. You know. Anyway. I don't know where that came from. I guess I stumbled across the Stairway to Heaven Gilligan's Island mix. If you haven't heard that,
it sounds hilarious.
Oh, it really is. Yeah, Google Gilligan's Island Stairway to Heaven, and then you'll I think you'll find it fun. I ran across that the other day. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I saw something else that was a mix on Gilligan's Island the other day too, and I didn't watch it. I just saw it posted, so I have to go and look there. They probably have several of them. Who knows?
Oh, it could be. Yeah.
Always fun. So Artin then says yes, or a reasonable facsimile. Gary had just said, without the complete healing of the Holy Spirit, you'll stay stuck in Psychoplanet forever. And Artin says, yes, or a reasonable facsimile thereof, whether it's this planet or another, only the form changes. The content remains the same. You've spoken about the course in, what, 30 countries and 44 states? Despite the excitement of it, haven't you realized that people are basically the same everywhere? Yeah, that's true. I've traveled a lot. People are the same everywhere. That's absolutely true.
Yep.
Gary says, yes, that's true. You go to China and you get the same kind of questions you do any place else. A guy raises his hand and he wants to know how he can get along with his mother-in-law. Artin, and you know the course well enough to give him an answer. Gary, the Holy Spirit knows the course well enough to give him an answer. Speaking of the Holy Spirit, I remember the story of how Lieutenant Colonel Stanislav Petrov of the Soviet Union saved the world from nuclear annihilation back in 83, and I'm glad he's gotten some recognition for that since you told me about him back in the 90s. But it makes me wonder. You said he listened to the Holy Spirit to make his decision not to launch the nuclear missiles. Does the Holy Spirit often intervene in world situations? Okay, I know the answer to this, but Artin's going to say it anyway. What the Holy Spirit does is to speak to everyone through the right part of the mind. Of course, this person has to be willing to listen. Adolf Hitler's mind was 99% influenced by the ego, and the Holy Spirit was not listened to by him. There was no willingness. Everybody has at least 1% spirit, even Chairman Mao, who killed way more people than Hitler. That's because you can't destroy the truth and you can only cover it over. On the other hand, you have someone like Gandhi, whose mind was 99% influenced by spirit, and he was more than willing to listen. Because of duality, it stands to reason that a lot of people are in the 50-50 range. They have a chance, but they have to make the decision to listen. If they listen, they become more like Gandhi. That's just an example, of course. You don't have to influence world events the way Gandhi did, but if you feel guided to do so by spirit, then go for it. Which reminds me of something I heard interesting yesterday, and I think you probably did too. I'll finish this paragraph. The important thing is that the mind is moving in the right direction. It's becoming more peaceful, and peace is the condition of the kingdom. That Marianne Williamson is running for president.
Uh-huh.
Did you hear that?
I did. Yeah, I've been getting that was one of the things that was announced on the Awakening to Love daily updates. I think there's a video. I haven't seen the video that Marianne has done yet because I don't think it's come up yet in the lineup of the 2-week online conference. Yeah, but I did see the announcement actually from several people sent it to me. So, yeah, and kind of be cool if she made a go of it. We'll see what happens. So hope that the idea that she represents are far fully integrated in the world. I want to, if I could, since we just got a moment or two to back up a little bit, mention a movie that I don't know if we've mentioned in our conversation, Slim, but I know I have in others, about Stanislav Petrov that is mentioned in a couple paragraphs back. There's a wonderful film. The film isn't anything I would watch over and over again, but it was certainly worth watching once, and it was about how on September 26, 1983, Stanislav Petrov literally saved this planet from nuclear annihilation. And the movie's called The Man Who Saved the World. It's a 2014 feature-length Danish documentary by filmmaker Peter Anthony. I just Googled it, so I have that in front of me. And I saw it several years ago when my friend Jonathan said, "Oh, you got to check this out." And it's really quite good. But what's amazing though is that he did listen to in violation of not only his direct orders and protocol, he listened to Holy Spirit and basically said, "Okay, I'm not going to." launch a counterattack on the United States from Russia until I have visual confirmation of the missiles that appear to be coming directly toward us. And I believe it was not one, two, three, or four, but actually five simultaneous missiles that were detected on Russian radar that this film documents, that were basically a computer electronic malfunction. And because it was so extraordinary to see these all happening at once, and it looked like, you know, an out-and-out nuclear, you know, attack launched by the U.S. against Russia, but it was an erroneous technical issue, and Petrov, you know, with both wisdom and sane thinking, you know, and logic, said, "Well, let's not blow up the world until we have, you know, evidence, further evidence that this is real." And so he instructed the people at the outposts where these five different, you know, missiles were supposed to be sighted coming over the horizon to, you know, at the appointed time, they, you know, because apparently the weather was such that they should be able to be visible. And sure enough, no missiles were seen. So he called off the retaliatory strikes and literally saved this planet from nuclear annihilation. Because they had everything on high alert, and they had all the missiles and armed and ready to launch and ready to go. And he basically said, "Nope, I'm calling it off." He got demoted and reprimanded and for saving the planet.
I'm sure he did, yeah.
But it's really interesting, you know, how, you know, sometimes following that guidance will have you do things that seem contrary to what we think of as conventional wisdom, but you know, in some cases, the conventional wisdom of this world is a little lacking.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's amazing that of all the people who could have gotten that particular assignment, it could have happened on somebody else's shift. Of all the people who would have been there for that to happen, mm-hmm. it was him, and he had the wisdom to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are so blessed. You know, it seems like coincidence. You know, it's like a coincidence, but you know, that's a part of the Holy Spirit's plan. I mean, really, it's a part of, you know, not because the Holy Spirit is designing scenarios, but because that is the only way that we're going to actually be able to see the value of doing what He says. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can't see the value in doing what the Holy Spirit says, you know, and so many people say, "Well, I can't understand what, you know, awaken would be, and, you know, what would happen if I, you know, accepted this and did this totally." And, you know, it scares me to imagine, because I can think of all kinds of things that might go wrong. You know, people have all these thoughts about it, and, you know, the Holy Spirit's part of the plan is to calm us down about, you know, what's happening, and allowing us to see the peace behind listening and doing what He's asking us to do. And there's a great example. Thank you for bringing that up, and I will go watch that movie, because
it's interesting. Yeah, it's worth seeing. Yeah.
Good, very good.
And what it points out toward the end of the movie is that, you know, he's just like the rest of us. He's dealing with all these things, and after that, he had, you know, all the repercussions of his decision, but also he had some, you know, family issues, you know, just like everybody else that he had to deal with, and you know, he documents that as well. So anyway, thank you as always, Lynn. For anybody who is online, which is, I presume, is pretty much anybody listening. There's still another week left of the Awaken to Love conference, and I put a link to it on acimblog.com, and you can, you know, basically get on that email list and get the daily updates to all the. There's over 100 different course-related speakers, a lot of familiar names, including Gary and Cindy, and there's this past week Judy Scutch Whitson and Bob Rosenthal and Tam Morgan of Foundation for Inner Peace gave a wonderful presentation about the course and, you know, the evolution of it and where it's going. And, you know, lots of good stuff there. So I've far too numerous to mention. I've been enjoying all of the video recordings and the live sessions that they've been having, and great stuff. So kudos, tip of the hat to Armin Rott and all, Nicole and all the other folks over there who are doing this wonderful work with putting on this online conference. And I'm going to suggest a whole bunch of other folks for next time when they do it, including you, Lynn, and several other folks. But you know, meanwhile, there's a lot of wonderful things happening with that. So check it out if you haven't already. So have a great week.
Thanks so much, Bruce. Yeah, you too. Have a great week. And I'm going to hang up from you, but I'm going to keep the mic because I want to talk to some folks in the room. So thank you so much, Bruce.
Likewise, Lynn. Have a great week, all. Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye. Okay, so update on Dove. He went for a walk with his dog. He slipped on the grass and or a rock and fell and broke his hip. He called me from the emergency room. He was in the emergency room for, I think, like 10 hours before they put him in a bed. But they did surgery yesterday afternoon. Was it yesterday? Yeah. Yesterday evening. I messaged him last night. He was doing well and not in a lot of pain. This morning he's up and they've got him walking a little bit. And if you please don't try to call him. I know everybody trying to call Dove. Please don't try to call him.